Hello and welcome to Women for Elections in Conversation with podcast series. As a way to extend our connections with you throughout this global pandemic, Women for Election has developed an online event series where some of the most prominent leaders, who are mainly women, from the world of politics, chat with some of our leading Irish journalists about political life, the issues of the day, and the need for gender equality. In this special International Women's Day event, we hear from an Taoiseach Micheál Martin, who is in conversation with leading Irish journalist and commentator Dermot MacDonald. Also in this special episode, Women for Elections chairperson Alison Couser and I, Catriona Gleeson, the CEO of Women for Election, join with Dervil for an extended conversation where we discuss Women for Elections' work to get equal representation of women and men in Irish politics, and we analyse the commitments that the Taoiseach made to address Ireland's serious underrepresentation of women in political life. On International Women's Day, the whole episode is focused on women's equality and in particular a robust conversation with the Taoiseach about how his leadership can drive the changes needed to get 50-50 representation in local and national government. We hope you get something useful from this episode, and as ever, please feel free to subscribe to the Women for Election podcast. You can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, womenforelection.ie, and if you have some spare cash, please donate via our website to help us do more.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy International Women's Day, and welcome to this very special edition of Women for Elections in Conversation with series with an Taoiseach Micheál Martin, TD. My name is Dermot MacDonald, and it is a privilege to join you today for this crucial conversation on women in politics at what is a critical moment for our society and our economy. The dearth of women's voices around the world has been one of the most remarkable and indeed regrettable phenomena we've witnessed during the COVID-19 crisis. We know that women have been disproportionately affected by the pandemic while having little or no place at the tables where key decisions are made. And we know from the EU's recent annual report on gender equality that the pandemic has exacerbated existing inequalities between women and men in almost every area of our lives. We are, it seems, at a critical inflection point where the goal of 30% representation of women in government in Ireland by 2025 is both within our grasp or could fall away. Well, few people have as much capacity or influence to drive the change required to meet that goal than the country's most senior political leader and Taoiseach Micheál Martin TD. He is the first male politician to feature in the series, and I look forward to speaking to him shortly. And you are a vital part of the conversation too. Just because we are virtual does not mean we are not interactive. So we encourage you to join the conversation online at Women for Election and to use the hashtags More Women and, of course, IWD 2021 on all of your social channels. And your questions and your comments and your thoughts are most welcome. So please get them into me. I will try and get to as many as I can throughout the next hour or so. We have a great conversation ahead for you this afternoon. But first, here's a welcome from Women for Elections Chief Executive Catriona Gleeson. Catriona, you're so very welcome this afternoon.
Thank you, Dervil, and happy International Women's Day to you too, and to our very diverse audience who joined us today. It's great to see so many of you joined us from across Ireland and beyond. What is a very busy, but yet a very different International Women's Day. I hope that wherever you are joining us from, that you are safe and well, and on this important day, wherever you are, that you're taking stock of all that you've achieved to help make the world a more equal and inclusive place for women and girls. We're reminded that this day first started in 1908 when over 15,000 women marched in New York for better rights for women. And a few years later in Ireland, in Sligo, the late great Countess Markovitch delivered a roadside speech rallying women to use their voices as she agitated for women's rights, including for the right to vote. Years later, when she was elected for Europe's first ever female minister, Ireland led the way in the world, showing that women too had a place in politics. And the challenge that Women for Election has chosen to on this International Women's Day and for the last number of years is to reposition Ireland from its current 101st place in world rankings back to the top, where we can be proud of having equal representation of women in politics and political life by 2030. Currently, unfortunately, we have only 23% TDs and 25% local councillors who are women. And there are no women at 40% of decision-making tables. So in Women for Election, we believe that this is a challenge that we need to succeed in. And it will only happen when we have a wide collaboration of women and men supporting more women to enter and stay in politics. And hence, we need to introduce radical reforms to make the Irish political system one that is fit for purpose for both women and to participate in equally. Women for Election are very proud of our track record in inspiring and supporting more women to enter and succeed in politics. And we've worked with over 50% of the women who were elected to local councils in 2019. 31 of the 36 female TDs elected in 2020 have worked with Women for Election over the years, and 11 of the 24 women in the Shannon. And last year, and around this time last year, when our worlds changed drastically and dreadfully for many, in Women for Election, we were very dynamic. And our response to the global pandemic meant that we moved online and found ways to reach even more people in 2020. Over 1,200 participants joined us from their home-style offices and bedrooms in nearly every county in Ireland. And in 2021 so far, we've had a great start to the year. We're just completing our first Inspire campaign, and that will finish tomorrow night with 31 women showing up every week with incredible passion and determination to change the way they see, the way they lead in their community and to be the change they want to see. In Women for Election, we're leading a national strategy to have at least 1,000 women running in the local elections in 2024, where we want to see at least, as Derval said, one in three women elected. And there are a lot of structural changes that are needed in order for us to get there, in order for us to attract more women to enter and to stay in politics. And therefore, it's even more important that there are commitments from the highest level of Irish government to make this happen, because it's only together that we're actually really going to make a difference. And hence why I and Women for Election, our board, and Alison, our chair, are delighted to be welcoming our Taoiseach, who is joining us for our special International Women's Day event with our chairperson and with Derval MacDonald in studio. And Derval, I'd just like to say we're extremely grateful to you giving so freely of your time and so generously of your expertise to make today possible. And also, before I hand back, I would just like to say a special thanks to Jonathan and the team in Fuel HQ. It's very exciting coming to you with this high quality production and to the generous donation from Fuel HQ for making this happen. So I'll hand back to you, Derval, now, and very much looking forward to the next hour or so.
That is great. Thank you so much, Katrina. And it really, really is fantastic to be here in Fuel HQ studio. Stay with us, Katrina, for a few moments while we wait for Taoiseach to join the call. I'm also joined in studio by Alison Kauser, who is the chair of Women for Election. Alison, I might maybe just go to you first because, you know, Countess Markievicz is always this kind of very, very strong reference point for women in Ireland, actually across the island and elsewhere. But almost 100 years after securing that vital vote, getting that breakthrough, do you think she'd be turning in her grave at the progress since her time in politics?
Well, there's no doubt she would be bitterly disappointed. Ireland made a great start as a new state. We made some serious statements about the position of women with Countess Markievicz being selected as one of the first female cabinet ministers across Europe. But we've seen absolutely glacial pace ever since. And even in what we might call the modern era, we now stand at only 22% of our thought being female. So I think it's a blight on our international reputation. It's something that really we need to address. We need systemic, radical change. And I think perhaps the man that we're going to speak to later today has the potential to do that for us.
And maybe he does. But before we even get there, when we look at the glacial pace of change, you can look at it over the 100 years, but even in the last 20 years, you know, since the early 1990s, when there was possibly 22, 23 women being elected to the Dáil, we're now at 36. And despite all of the big social change we've seen, all of the activism, is that disappointing that we haven't seen an acceleration to the extent that we should have in the last 20 years or so?
I think it's disappointing, but I think ultimately it's down to some of the systemic changes that are needed to take away those barriers. I mean, at Women for Election, as Katrina has mentioned, we're seeing literally thousands of women coming forward, putting their hand up and saying, I could do that. I should be at that decision-making table. I should be representing my community. And the last year has been phenomenal in terms of the number of women stepping forward. But they are faced with those systemic barriers that have existed since the existence or the beginning of the state. And we need no more tweaking. We need some radical change that's going to bring down those barriers and make it much more encouraging and supportive for women to come forward and play their part, you know, what their right to represent their communities.
And Katrina, just obviously Women for Election was in the news last week for the launch of that landmark report, which really speaks to the experiences of women who have run for election. They all say go for it. They don't regret running for election, but there are some serious structural barriers that they experience. Can you maybe just speak to us to the main findings of that report, Katrina?
Yeah, Gerbil, I mean, the first thing you said there and what was very positive and heartening from the report was that despite the challenges that the women who ran for election met, they were actually very strong in inspiring other women to run because they said they don't regret it. Whether they succeeded or not in their election campaigns, they had a very life-changing experience, which has made a huge difference to them. And so they're encouraging more women to come forward. In terms of the core structural issues that were raised and highlighted hugely in the media again this weekend, maternity leave. I mean, I still have to pinch myself when I stop to realise that in 2021, Ireland does not have paid maternity leave for our elected politicians. And there's no paternity leave either for other parents. So this is obviously one area that the report has highlighted and something that we hope to see changes on quite soon and imminent with Minister McEntee's announcement over the weekend again that she will take her paid maternity leave. The other areas that the report highlighted issues in relation to online abuse, and we know that this is an issue that's been met by both male and female politicians, but particularly the nature and the vile nature of attacks on women and on women who are from ethnic minority and from migrant backgrounds. And then the area of gender quotas. So in terms of, we have gender quotas introduced in 2014, and we could see in 2014 the difference that made when the elections happened in 2016. So we jumped, our figures jumped significantly in 2016 and then has stagnated again in 2020. So the gender quotas are not available yet in local and Shannon elections. And it's really important that there's a mechanism put in place to have gender quotas as well. And then finally, one of the other areas that the report highlighted was the need for appropriate pay for local councillors. So we got commitments from the Minister for State last week. He's been working hard to remunerate appropriately local councillors so that their part-time job is remunerated in a way that they can actually afford to do the job. So we hope to hear that will be in place in the near future.
And can you speak to me briefly, Katrina, just you mentioned it in your introduction about the Inspire series and all of these women who are, despite the pandemic, not being able to meet up and to gather, have been coming forward to get involved in whatever way that they can.
Yes, Gerbil, I came into the job in December and I was a little bit worried around how we'd engage women in a way that actually was meaningful online and that we'd actually be able to deliver training that would be making a difference for them. And so we've had many events in 2021, but we started our Inspire School a few weeks ago and I am deeply heartened by the energy that I've been meeting in the room, the passion and the dedication and the determination of 31 women from all backgrounds, from all over Ireland, from West Clare to Donegal and right around down to County Cork. We have women who are really keen to run in the elections, and Women for Elections training programs are designed to support them to be prepared. And it's 2021 and the elections are 2024, but now is the time for them to be campaigning, and that's what we're supporting them to do.
Alison, just shortly before we bring the Taoiseach in, the In Conversation with series started. We were all Zoom in a room, sometimes in bedrooms, sometimes wherever we could, but it has become a really, really important part of Women for Election. Like, we've had some fantastic interviewees, some of whom I've interviewed myself, Ambassador Samantha Power, Minister Catherine Martin, but we've also had Deputy Mary Lou MacDonald and in more recent time Deputy Holly Cairns and so much more. It's become a really, really brilliant way for Women for Election and for those who are interested just to stay connected.
It really has. And I suppose what the series has done is it's allowed women who are already in positions to share their experiences with women who are looking to and aspiring to get involved in politics. That sense of collegiality, that sense of support that women who are already in those positions feel is really very, very heartening. And, you know, a lot of the young women coming through our programmes, they really need to, I suppose, they need a lot of mentorship. They need to understand what the job is really like. And they really benefit from hearing those stories of women who have achieved those positions and are very happy to share their experiences with younger women coming through.
We took a little bit of flack online when you announced that that it was going to be a male politician who was going to be the next interviewee for the In Conversation With series. But we did go, we went to the most senior political leader. How important is it to have men front and centre at the conversation around women in politics?
Well, I mean, this is not a fringe issue. This is not something that affects only or that will benefit only one part of the population. Having more women and better diversity at decision-making tables delivers better decisions for all. The current system is male-dominated. There's no question about that. So we need to work with men and women to change the system. And who better to go to on International Women's Day than the person who is at the top of the tree in terms of politically in this country? I'm really looking forward to hearing his vision for what Ireland can be in terms of a place for women to achieve his office, potentially. And we hope that will happen soon for women in this country. So really looking forward to hearing what the Taoiseach has to say.
Well, and I think without further ado, we should go along to welcome the Taoiseach. Micheál Martin TD, of course, needs no introduction. Taoiseach since June 2020 and leader of Fianna Fáil since January 2011. The former Minister for Health and Children, one of many ministries that he has held, secured international acclaim for Ireland in 2004 when we became the first country in the world to introduce a full workplace smoking ban. We led the way in smoking. Is there a similar revolution underway for women in politics? Taoiseach, you are very, very welcome. Happy International Women's Day.
Apologies, Gerald. I think we were
Taoiseach,
muted there.
Do we have to get you your I'm on mute T-shirt?
I was so anxious to get in, you know.
Well, listen, we lost you for a moment there.
Can I just say, Danny, happy returns. And I just say, look, delighted to be in the position to have this discussion with you and to say that both as leader of my party and indeed as Taoiseach, this is an issue that is very high on my agenda, and I'm doing everything I possibly can with others to increase the participation of women in politics in particular at all levels, and then across society more generally at senior levels in different sectors of society, which requires obviously governmental leadership and a whole of societal response, and indeed significant culture change as well, particularly in the area of politics.
Well, thank you, Taoiseach. I just got over there the stress of thinking that I'd lost you and I was going to have to fill in the next 45 minutes or so on my own. But look, let's go to the global picture before we go local, because Ireland currently ranks 101st in the world for the percentage of women elected in Parliament. And we lag behind countries such as Afghanistan and China. It's, you know, for a country that has been to the forefront of major social change in the last 10 to 15 years, including, you know, marriage equality, the repeal of the Eighth, so many, many things. It's not a comfortable place to be, Taoiseach, is it?
No, it's not. It's not a good position to be in at all. And I think we do need to reflect deeply on that. We have introduced quotas at national elections. I found that very helpful when I was renewing the party from 2011 onwards. It enabled me to bring forward women more effectively at national level in terms of national elections. But I seem to believe that, first of all, I think our politics and our culture of politics is very, very difficult in terms of the work hours, in terms of the nature of it, exacerbated in more recent times by online abuse. We can discuss that later. But I sometimes think also our electoral system is probably holding us back somewhat in terms of multi-seat proportional representation. Electoral system creates very significant inter-party competition as well as intra-party competition. It can be a very, very difficult journey for people and particularly for women, as we have experienced. And so I think that's something that probably deserves greater consideration. I think at local level, and in Ireland, local electoral politics is key to progress in international politics, and all of the data and the research would show that. I think we need to not just seek out women candidates and encourage women candidates, but we have to comprehensively resource women candidates to contest, compete and win elections. And that has proved challenging in terms of the winning of elections and the a more comprehensive package of supports to have in place for women. We're working on that as a party. I know other parties are as well. But I do think the electoral side of it can be very daunting and very challenging. And also the subsequent lifestyle on local councils, for example, can be difficult in terms of the timing of meetings and the lack of facilitation for childcare and for a range of other costs that people incur whilst entering into politics.
Well, we look at how, you know, we fare internationally, just to stay there for the moment, Taoiseach, we placed gender equality, particularly the role of women in peacekeeping and conflict resolution. We placed that at the heart of our campaign to win a seat on the United Nations Security Council. And it was a huge part of that campaign and that very, very successful campaign to win the seat. Is it something, not to put it too strongly, but is it something of an international stain that we have gone out and campaigned successfully internationally and yet the very things that we're campaigning for are what we are lacking on the home front in many circumstances?
Well, I think, look, it's not a good story for Ireland. Internationally, we have taken some very commendable initiatives in terms of gender-based violence, for example, globally, particularly in terms of our Irish Aid programme. And Mary Robinson would have been a significant leader on that, and indeed as Foreign Minister, I would have worked with Mary Robinson in relation to advancing some of those initiatives in conflict zones globally. In the context of our own political system, it is not a good story at all, because it's important that our electoral and political system should reflect the diversity of our society and to have the range of perspectives and balance that makes for a good parliament and makes for good national politics. I think the last general election was a bit of a setback, if I'm honest. I think we probably thought we would make greater advances, but it was still at 22.5%, which was a disappointment. I think we have to look more deeply at the culture around politics and the system of politics, the lifestyle around politics. Is it a major turnoff for people? And is it a major turnoff for women? Do they find it increasingly something that's not for them? That's a story across politics. And I just worry about the nature of the political culture as it evolves. And more recently, the online situation and social media, where some candidates get targeted, is having a negative impact also.
We're going to shortly, hopefully, just maybe interrogate further some of those barriers and challenges. But I wanted to speak to you, Taoiseach, about the moment we find ourselves in with COVID-19. Women are only marginally, but we are the majority of the population. We're just over half of the population in Ireland. And yet, as we know, less than a quarter of our elected politicians. And yet, even despite those challenges, we are absent from 40% of key government cabinet subcommittees that really speak to the moment we're in. The business committee, the health committee, COVID-19. The optics are pretty brutal, aren't they? Just to have seen, a pejorative term, particularly during lockdown 1 and 2, just the men in suits. It wasn't a good look.
But latterly, women are playing a role on the COVID cabinet subcommittee. Like Helen McEntee would have been as Minister for Justice, Norma Foley as Minister for Education has been at the last two COVID committees, because obviously education. Catherine Martin in an earlier phase, both on the economic committee and in terms of the Economic Recovery Committee and in terms of COVID as well, again, because of our wide range of responsibilities in arts, culture, and tourism and travel, hospitality, all areas that have been devastated by COVID-19. So what we have been doing is making sure to bring, obviously, the women member of cabinet along with onto the committee and making contributions as well. Heather Humphreys, of course, in terms of the pandemic unemployment payment, is a member of the Economic Recovery Committee and makes very significant contributions there in terms of the variety of schemes that are in place to sustain incomes. So it's a bit better than maybe presented there in terms of the reality of what's happening both on the COVID Cabinet Committee and on the Economic Recovery Committee.
Do you accept, though, that particularly during the first lockdown and perhaps the second as well, just the fact that we were not seeing women and the fact that everyone was calling out, because we know and we feel that the lack of women was reflected in a lot of the key decisions that were made, particularly in the early stage around issues such as childcare for our healthcare workers, which were not a gendered issue. They actually went to the heart of the logistical and health issues that we were facing in that lockdown, because women constitute over almost 80% of our healthcare workforce in Ireland.
Yes, I mean, that's a fair comment. I mean, I think up to 78% of women constitute our health workforce, and so are on the front line in relation to COVID-19. And clearly that needs to be reflected back into decision-making around issues like childcare, education, particularly in the early school years, in terms of both the development of the child, but also critically in terms of facilitating people who are working on the front line. And women have, in my view, been, from my perspective, disadvantaged even more because of COVID-19, and have had greater difficulties as a result of the pandemic across a range of issues. And that has manifested itself, obviously, in childcare, the early education area as well, in terms of, you know, the junior infants right up to second class and beyond. Also, in issues like domestic abuse, for example, where the numbers have increased during the various lockdowns, and other areas as well, in terms of some of the workplaces that have been affected, and in terms of income reductions.
Indeed, and just that second shift phenomenon, and Taoiseach, women are trying to hold it at work together, but also picking up the terms in terms of care of both young children and elderly parents. I wonder now, just obviously we're more than a year into this pandemic, do you think that there would have been any decisions that would have been different had we listened to women more at the start of it? And I'm just even thinking that today I can go out and buy on International Women's Day a scented candle or a bottle of champagne, but a woman cannot go and get some shoes for her children or clothes. Like, I mean, is that a key decision that even at this late stage do you think must be revisited, particularly now that children are going back to school?
Well, the advices we're receiving on all of this is from public health, and you know, we have to obviously take decisions based on the public health advice. And to be fair to the public health doctors, you know, they're not making it on a gender biased basis. They look at it in a very exclusively focused way in terms of the public health dimensions of COVID-19, particularly the new variant. And basically, they've looked at this as a general mobility issue now in this particular wave of the pandemic. And their big concern is the variant and the degree to which the variant can spread so easily, much more so than the previous iterations of the virus. And that is what essentially is governing their response to this. So we did amend in the previous restrictions. You know, we had click and collect and so forth to try and facilitate women in situations where they had to buy clothes for children and that, or indeed themselves, and also in terms of online shopping and so on. But it is difficult. I'm not going to disagree with you. It is very, very difficult. But mobility generally of the population is what is driving the public health advice right now. And they really wanted to keep mobility at very low levels whilst we get the numbers down in our hospitals, which is, again, to relieve our healthcare workers, who are predominantly women, because we have to do that because the pressure on them from January was just unacceptable, and we cannot go back there. Thankfully, that is working. Thankfully, the public health advice is having an effect. People are adhering to it, and it is getting us down to lower numbers. And I think in the week before the 5th of April, we will be in a position then to revisit some of these situations.
It's just interesting you're saying, you know, the public health stage aren't made kind of on a gender basis, but I just wonder, had there been a few more women in the room, could they have maybe pointed out some of these issues, not least because of how totemic or otherwise the issue of children's shoes can be in Irish politics.
But there would be women on NPHET, of course. There are women, very senior decision makers there too, who are women who are in the public health domain. And what it basically meant was I would know public health, and public health tends to look at public health principles in terms of how do we stop the spread of a a very contagious virus. That's the kind of focus they look at. And from the perspective of dealing with the variant, it works, or dealing with the virus, but it has very difficult consequences for people.
Absolutely. Let's go and talk, Taoiseach, about some of those barriers. If you read the Women for Election report, there's a great insight from the political scientist Joni Lewandowski, who says that when women enter legislatures, they enter masculine territory. And he says they may not face hostile men, but they do face institutions that are constructed to exclude women. That's still the case, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's a fair comment. I think that's a fair assessment. It is changing, but it needs to change more. And particularly the whole area around meeting times and the nature of how the local authorities, how parliaments organise themselves. Now, this experience during COVID may change some of that. And the whole idea of remote working, the whole idea of greater use of technology may just give us additional flexibilities to deal with this much more sensibly than has been the case. So, for example, I think most party leaders would say, you know, securing candidates and getting as wide a diversity of candidates for local elections has been challenging in recent times. And I think some of that is around the work-life balance. Some of it is around the timing of meetings, the pressures on public representatives who are working, for example, in other occupations, how they can release themselves to become candidates and then to become, you know, full participatory councillors on councils. The Dáil as well, we've been talking about it for quite a long time, but we get back into bad examples very quickly in terms of late night sittings, late night votes, and all of that. And then thirdly, the culture, the clientelism of Irish politics is not reducing. So the parliamentary and legislative dimension of politics is one thing. The constituency-based clientelist model is as alive and vibrant as ever. And that places, again, very, very significant pressures on politicians, and particularly on women politicians, in their constituencies, in multi-seat constituencies in particular. And that is why I said earlier, looking at alternatives to such a system could help us in terms of making politics that bit more attractive and to enter into, but also a bit more livable in terms of the pressures on one's life. Particularly, you know, people have choices coming into the world, you know, coming out of colleges and so on like that. And a lot of people weigh it up and opt not to go into politics because they feel there are pressures all around them.
And let's talk about some of those pressures. And one of the big political issues of the day, which is, of course, the fact that very happily, our Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, will be taking maternity leave for the first 6 months when her child is due in May, when her baby is born. And of course, it's landmark. She's the first sitting cabinet minister to have a baby in office. I'm really uncomfortable, Taoiseach, with two things. One, that we're even having this conversation about maternity leave for politicians. But two, that what is essentially a private matter for Helen McEntee, her husband and for her family, has the potential to catapult Ireland into international headlines. Because here we are in 2021 and we have no maternity or paid maternity or paternity leave for our politicians. How are we in this space and how are we going to get out of this? Could there our system, is there really a constitutional impediment that is going to force a sitting justice minister and a capable one to resign?
Well, first of all, we are committed to facilitating Helen McEntee to take maternity leave and not to resign. And that is something that government is committed to. And we're going to facilitate that through a range of mechanisms. We are here, we have a legal and constitutional framework which doesn't facilitate TDs, for example, to take maternity leave. And my view is that there will have to be legislative change, but I get the sense as well we're going to have to look at constitutional change in respect of members of parliament, the Dáil, and then obviously ministers as well, very clearly having systems in place that would facilitate much more easily the taking of paternity.
Are we looking?
And I would hope I would hope perhaps that the Citizens' Assembly on gender equality may make some recommendations to that, but we also will be looking at that, and that's something that I'm seeking progress on, because this, you're correct, there is a constitutional framework there that we cannot ignore. Therefore, it's within that framework that we're going to facilitate Helen taking maternity leave. And I think it's
definitely... She holds a very, very senior role, a very, very important role in government. And of course, it's very important. And I know a lot of commentary this weekend about the need for a minister to be in place, obviously, in particular on justice and security matters. She has a very, very, very important function. As you see them, look, I mean, it seems bizarre that we're at all involving the Attorney General in a pregnancy, but the Attorney General in the past has been involved in many things relating to women's fertility and reproduction in Ireland. But what do you see are the constitutional impediments, and if they can't be overcome without a referendum, how are we going to facilitate our Justice Minister and indeed other women?
Sorry, when I reference the referendum, it's not specifically to Helen's situation, it's more general. It's the broader story around Dáil Éireann. The Oireachtas, that's the point I'm making. And there could be, I think we need to do some work on that, not just the government, but the Oireachtas as a whole, in terms, needs to approach that issue in terms of the future. We should not be in this position. It means reform of the electoral and political system. And that means, in my view, some constitutional change to make it definite and to create a definitive framework into the future for members of Dáil Éireann and Shannon Éireann. That's my view there. I do believe we can accommodate Helen, and I do believe there are mechanisms through which we can facilitate Helen taking maternity leave. Obviously, I'll be working with the other party leaders in respect of that, and officials have been working on that in my department and within the Department of Justice to bring this about.
And it's not just...
believe this will become a catalyst for wider... change.
And unfortunately, Taoiseach, it's too late for some. Just this morning, breaking news that our Green Party councillor in West Dublin, Claire O'Byrne, resigned. She had a baby in December and she has resigned because she couldn't secure, obviously, maternity leave. And how we've now lost another councillor. And you talk about that all important local level. So this is a real live issue, but not just for women, but also for men. So absent that broader constitutional conversation, what are we going to do in the meantime to facilitate these arrangements for both women and men in the Dáil?
Well, like, for example, in just during the last general election, we had two members, Lisa Chambers and Catherine Ardagh, who were pregnant during the election. They've since had babies and all doing well, but they found it particularly difficult, you know, in the lead into the election. I know Lisa was targeted to some degree, not on that issue, but on other issues as well during that election. So it is particularly difficult, given the nature of politics and the electoral system that we operate. I mean, in some other jurisdictions, alternate members, you're allowed, it's made clear in advance of the election that you can take maternity leave, an alternate member can take your place for a defined period of time. That's what I mean by kind of a series of reforms that we need to introduce to make this simple and straightforward, and that everybody knows what's possible and what's not possible. It's long past time that we got this sorted as an Oireachtas. I think we're going to have to do that.
Let's broaden it out just beyond politics for the moment and look at the issue of childcare, which is often seen as a women's issue, but in fact is a societal issue. Earlier this week, one frustrated mum, Emma Jane Quinlan, I hope she doesn't mind me repeating her tweet, but she said that yearly childcare for a toddler is double that for fees to a leading Dublin private boys' school. So childcare for a toddler for a year, double that for the fees to one of the top schools in the country. And in her frustration, she was saying, how can we get back into the workforce? How can we move ahead? Like, I mean, this is a fiscal as much as a personal issue. What are we going to do about childcare, and how are we going to get it away from being an issue strictly for women? Because this goes to the heart of our workforce, to retention, to attrition, and to the full participation of women in the workforce, which we know accelerates our GDP and other indicators for health and wealth of an economy.
From my own perspective as an educator, first and foremost, before I came into politics, my view is early education and educating a child from the earliest years is about the child first and foremost, and the development of the child. So you're correct in saying it's a societal image, but societal issue, sorry. But in addition to that, it is of course of crucial importance in terms of facilitating participation in the workforce. And my sense is, and my view is, that we have to increase resources to childcare, but also align it more to a state-driven system. If you take it, we start primary school at 4 years of age. There are no issues in terms of the resourcing of the full state system from 4 to 6. And in my view, you know, we have the ECCE scheme, which is a state-led scheme, but it's not as comprehensive perhaps as it could be. And so my view is, from the earliest years right through from the 0 to 6, we need to be working towards a state model, in my view, that can embrace the various providers right at the moment, but to do so in a comprehensive way to provide for women and indeed for children as well. I just think there's a huge gap. There's a huge gap between the pre-primary and the post-primary in terms of resource allocation, it seems to be.
And when do you think we're going to be able to do that, Taoiseach? Because we're already getting warnings about what is going to happen. I know no cliff edges, but there are going to be big, big financial decisions to be made, hopefully when this pandemic comes to an end. So when are we going to tackle that, one of the biggest issues for women in politics elsewhere?
Minister O'Gorman is progressing and is advancing additional resources for childcare. I think we will have decisions to make in terms of prioritisation of key areas like childcare and health services post-pandemic. We've already made substantial investment in health in terms of not just COVID, but non-COVID health. I mean, this year's additional allocation to health was 4 billion. 2 billion of that was for non-COVID developments, which we need to embed into our health service into the future. And similarly, in terms of the early education side of it, I think we have to prioritise that area above other areas in terms of expenditure, because it's the crucial period in the life of a child, in terms of the development of the child. And it also needs to be more comprehensive in terms of the day itself and facilitating participation in the workforce. And currently, it falls short on both fronts.
It does, absolutely. Another area which is one of real concern, Taoiseach, is the area of abuse, both online and offline abuse, particularly for our female politicians. We know from really excellent research carried out at NUI Galway, and the facts are worth repeating, 96% of current and former women members of the Oireachtas have received online abuse, everything from their appearance to their intellect. More than 70% have been threatened with physical abuse, and almost 4 in 10 have been threatened with rape or sexual violence. And we know that it's even more pronounced for female politicians from racial, ethnic, religious, minority groups such as Traveller Woman and God Forgive a Woman Who Actually Dares to Speak Out on Feminist Issues. But even looking at the abuse directed at people such as the current Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Shue, it is frightening. And what are we going to do? I know men and women are the subject of abuse, but particularly the abuse of women in political life, and thinking in particular of Jo Cox, just looking across the Irish to see as to what can happen when those online threats can become very real.
I think we will have to legislate, and we are preparing legislation in terms of online safety and the provision of an online safety commissioner. I worry deeply about it. I think social media is having a very destructive impact on politics and on decision making. And I also believe that the impact on individuals is very oppressive, and particularly on women. And the trolling that is going on, the abuse that is going on, is very, very detrimental to our body politic. Ireland is one of the oldest independent parliamentary democracies in the world. It is something we should cherish. And I see aspects of social media as a threat to that tradition of an independent parliamentary democracy. I watched recently that documentary on the social dilemma, which speaks more to how opinions can be manipulated and so on, and dictators can thrive on such algorithms. But in terms of the abuse, it is a deterrent, it is a deterrent to people to keep on going and to keep on in politics. And it can be very, very damaging on a number of fronts. It can be damaging electorally if a false story is put up and a person is attacked on the basis of false and misleading narratives, but also in terms of the psychological well-being of an individual who is the recipient of such abuse. It can erode that person's confidence over time, can undermine that person's self-esteem, and overall then become a significant deterrent to that person's full participation in politics. And it's something we have to...
I was just going to say, because we are in a public conversation, if I level abuse at you or any other person, I will find myself down in the forecourts forthwith or the subject of a Garda criminal investigation. What are we going to do about the role of social media companies whose fora are used to facilitate that abuse?
I think we're going to have to get tougher with them. We've engaged with them. They constantly say that they're employing more and more sophisticated mechanisms to try and root out hate speech and to root out this abuse much more quickly. But it's not really happening to the degree that it should be. We saw recently in the United States, the assault on the Capitol, where this can lead to and the type of views it can lead to. And the misrepresentations of people. So
that could happen here. Do you fear that could happen here? The events that we saw in the Capitol, do you think that could be replicated here in Ireland?
Of course it could. It could easily happen anywhere at this stage. But what would worry me also is the personal safety of individuals. If you have a degree of misleading narrative on an ongoing basis, people getting different, wrong perceptions of what a particular individual in public life and then could go out to harm that individual. I mean, those are the kind of worries that one would have down the line. At the moment, it's at the level of very strong psychological pressure on individuals. And I think people are finding that difficult.
Let's talk about...
And the pressure that's coming from online is quite significant now in the political world that we live in.
Yeah, and a lot of crossover between those racist, sexist, misogynistic kind of views, they all seem to coalesce together. Let's talk about quotas, because we are, as we said earlier, kind of leaders in social change. The smoking ban, which you're involved with, marriage equality, everything else. And when we had the legislation to introduce gender quotas, that was a bold action. It was a bold action at the time, resisted in quarters at the time, but it was really effective. So for 2016, which was the first year, and it's worth bearing out, there was a 90% increase in the number of female candidates, a 40% increase in the number of TDs that were elected. A lot happened in 2020, which wasn't just about gender, but that was not repeated. There were one less female candidate and only one more person that was elected. What are we going to do with quotas in circumstances where, the big parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, are barely hitting that 30%? What are we going to do about quotas? Are you going to extend them to the local and Seanad elections?
Well, certainly I have found the quota at national level very, very effective from my own perspective. And we have come from a very low base after 2011. So I found it at national level effective in terms of ensuring that we had women on electoral platforms. And in fact, in every constituency, the last time we had a woman on every ticket for in every county for more or less, which was a significant degree of progress for us, albeit we would have preferred to have got more elected. And we didn't expect some of the losses that occurred. In other words, sitting TDs, particularly Lisa Chambers and Fiona Loughlin, we had expected them to win, but they lost out narrowly, and that was to be obviously regretted from our perspective. At local level, I'm not against quotas at local level, but they're not actually as big. I don't think they'll have as big an impact at local level as it would at national level, because generally speaking, at local level, national headquarters, national leadership teams want to encourage as many women as possible and select as many women as possible. So I think we need to do, there's a bit more needed at local level to source candidates, persuade people who would make very good public representatives, and then demonstrate a very strong support package.
Do you not think quotas have a strong role to play at local level, because local is the pipeline, and we have to have that pipeline. So do you not think quotas could really, really help for the local elections, particularly with 2024 not too far around the corner?
I have no issues with quotas at all, and I support them. But what I'm trying to make, I'm trying to be honest with you as a party leader, we had no issue at local level in having women selected. We didn't have an issue. You will have a general election level because you might have only two candidates in a Dáil constituency. One might have only one candidate in a Dáil constituency. So do you understand what I'm saying here? That like it's definitely needed at national level. At local level, you can have four candidates, three candidates. There's less of a focus on the number of candidates. So it wasn't a barrier to us not having quotas in selecting women to run for us in local elections on the last, the last time and the time before that. What I find is more generally, and it speaks back to the perhaps the Moorhead report, also to this work-life balance issue, and also women who are working already in occupations finding it difficult then to
be facilitated by
the local electoral setup. You know, some councils say you have to have a meeting on Monday morning at 11 o'clock, for example. That's how some councils organise themselves. That may not suit women in certain scenarios. And women tend to really, my experience, women look through this right through to the other side and want to make sure that not only are they going to contest the election, but if they win, that they can manage all of the implications of being a councillor. And those are issues we need to look a bit more at.
And
how do councils organise themselves?
There are two questions that arise from that, Taoiseach. Given the circumstance we find ourselves in, what are the realistic chances politically of getting through a 50% pay rise for our councillors? And I know that Peter Burke, the junior minister, was out speaking to that earlier today, but what are the chances politically of getting that through in the current fiscal environment?
Well, the government is committed to it as part of the reform of local government. And it speaks to what I said earlier about encouraging people to participate in local politics. Because increasingly now, if you participate in local politics, you don't have time to do much else. And so for people in occupations who are already working, for example, it's very, very difficult to try and do both. Even if you're working part-time in a different occupation, it's very hard to do a county councillor's job now or a city councillor's job, because it tends to be full time. What's being proposed is not a full time salary or anything near that, but it perhaps would help in terms of the effort of all parties to recruit candidates more generally into local politics, and particularly women into local politics, because there are expenses associated with childcare, there are expenses associated with a whole range of issues that the proposed increased allowance might facilitate and might help.
Let's just talk about political parties, Taoiseach, because they play a central role at each and every stage. And this was really borne out in the most recent report for Women for Election, from recruitment to resources, from actually getting on the ticket. And a big issue which many suspect was a problem in the last election is that women being selected to contest what might be regarded as unwinnable seats. There are critical processes, particularly when women are running for election, particularly to the national parliament. The parties need to reflect hard on the way that they engage so that it just doesn't become a token or a cosmetic exercise, because there is a sense that ahead of the 40% target, which we're going to see for 2024, which is a minimum, it is not a target, it should be the minimum that we're looking for, there's a sense that in 2020 there was a consolidation by the men.
Didn't work out for a lot of men either. A lot of men lost their seats as well.
They did too.
I think, as I mentioned, two high-profile candidates on our side who we didn't anticipate losing their seats. We'll take lessons from that. We've tended to go for, we've selected women who have a good chance of winning a seat. It goes back to your multi-seat constituency, the different types of pressures. And obviously parties want to win seats. And then there's a balance between the number of candidates you run to maximise the vote. It depends on a 5-seater, 4-seater, or 3-seater. You might run different types of electoral tickets. But I think the 40% will actually force the pace a bit more. It will be very, very challenging for political parties. And that's why the local situation is very important, the local elections, that you have good quality of candidates to choose from. We've had some very challenging battles internally in terms of selection competitions, where we've facilitated women getting selected, but it wasn't easy. And even that process proved very challenging, if I'm honest, in respect of quite a number of women candidates. So the 40% will be challenging, but I think it will make for bolder decisions by parties in terms of their electoral strategy in each individual constituency. And it will also mean having to look a bit more forward in terms of identifying candidates who will have a realistic chance in constituencies. That's important as well.
The world celebrated with the appointment of Kamala Harris as the vice president, the first woman, first person of colour to hold that role. And one of the signature initiatives introduced by the Biden administration is the creation of a gender council that is directly accountable to the president, which is, I suppose, designed to take a whole of government approach to gender equity. It's supposed to be sent to gender-proof all of the government decisions. And I'm just wondering, is there something, you know, you've taken a very important initiative, Shared Ireland, you've taken direct responsibility. I know we've spoken to that before, and indeed the role of women as part of that. But is there an argument for an Irish gender council in circumstances where some of the biggest political issues in recent years, whether it's childcare, cervical check, mother and baby homes, have a distinct gender element to it that seem to disproportionately affect women? Is there a case for an Irish-style gender council to gender-proof, to put in that proper lens on all of our future policy decisions, including in relation to any financial decisions, pensions, the works?
There may very well be. I'm very conscious we have the Council for the Status for Women, which makes recommendations to government. And I think I'm going to speak to President Biden on that issue and the role and, you know, the potential impact of that gender council. I mean, there are areas like, for example, the gender pay gap, which is completely unacceptable in the modern era. And we are committed to publishing legislation to make sure that there's full public transparency in terms of pay scales within private companies in terms of the gender pay gap. There are issues in many sectors still in terms of women being appointed to senior roles. I mean, the third level education sector has been selected out as one area that by now should have had far higher numbers of women in senior positions and at leadership positions as presidents of universities and technological universities. Those are areas where we can make very rapid and, in my view, steady progress on. And a gender council could play a role in that respect in terms of keeping the pressure on government to make sure we deliver through on those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that's something, a whole local government approach that was directly answerable to the Office of Taoiseach would be something I think that would be very welcome. Unsurprisingly, Taoiseach, you can imagine there are a lot of questions coming in for you for our audience. So I have a few for you. So one is from Katrina McLean. She says, what radical political structural change will we see during the lifetime of this government? She said, we need something on the scale of the smoking ban to achieve equality of esteem and balance in decision making. She says, you are in the unique position and the capacity to deliver. We all benefit from gender balance. It's not about optics. So what radical political structural change could we see in the lifetime of this government?
Well, I think, look, one that may not be immediately apparent now, but I think an electoral commission bill, and if we got that enacted, could pave the way for a more reforming electoral process into the future. That could over time have an impact in terms of participation in politics. But also, I think the more important area I would see as being in childcare is an area where we want to make our mark. And in terms of the broader area of electoral politics, I think the 40% will be the most immediate impactful change in terms of the number of women participating in general elections into the future and also reform at local electoral level also.
One of our audience members says in Sweden, they follow gender analysis in budgeting and policy. Do we deploy a similar approach? And if not, why? And the second part of that is in Sweden, again, we always look to the Nordic countries, gender balance in government is voluntary and encouraged. And on ballots, all parties agree that every second candidate is a woman. So it's a voluntary system, but all the parties there agree every second candidate is a woman. Would you support a similar approach in Ireland? And if not, why not?
Well, I think that's where we're going to head to. But I think the 40% will be the first step towards that. And 40% is very significant. And de facto will have that type of impact if you think of the number of constituencies we have and the number of candidates that parties would be running in each constituency. But that will be balanced by existing candidates who have very strong electoral records, and that, don't underestimate the tensions that will cause in themselves in terms of all of that. So I think the 40% is the more realistic immediate impact, but de facto it will have that type of impact on electoral tickets.
When you say that, don't underestimate the resistance, are we saying don't underestimate the resistance from men?
No, it could be from, it's the resistance to tension. Like in some constituencies, in one constituency, we had a majority of women, a number of constituencies, we had a majority of women, right? It's just individuals. I mean, people want to get elected. They will contest the multi-seat nomination process. So you get all sorts of moves made. I want to be the candidate, somebody will say. The party wants the other person to be the candidate. These are almost primary elections within the parties, all conventions. The membership want their vote increasingly. Grassroots don't want to be pushed over by headquarters and told do this or else. So you have all of these competing tensions. That's the point I am making. It's not men versus women, crudely put, as you just said it. It's a bit more complex than that. We've empowered our membership in terms of nominating candidates. Headquarters reserves the right through an election to National Constituency Committee to add candidates. And that's, at the moment, the most effective way to add women. So that comes back to your cultural issue on the ground in terms of promoting women on the ground and getting women through conventions and so on, and women winning conventions. That's where we've experienced a lot of challenges. At the national level, adding women is something that happens from all parties and is the easier option.
One of the challenges on International Women's Day, even for women who organise events like this, a question we often get asked is, are your events inclusive enough in terms of, are we speaking enough about our ethnic minorities? Are the members of our Traveller and Roma community, of course, more women? There's a big, big debate even within that about diversity and inclusion. And I have a question here from Carol Azams, who says, what do you think will be the biggest challenges for people from ethnic communities with little or no English, or those without formal education who would otherwise like to be involved in Irish politics? Over 12.5% of the population here is, they're not perhaps born here or otherwise. We do have a big challenge, Taoiseach, because even we have a very strong, formidable member of the travelling community in the Shannon, but less than 1% of all people in local elections. It is not representative of society at large.
No, it is not. And perhaps the Shannon is one early route that we could use to facilitate the participation of minorities at national political level and to give voice to minority groupings, and whether in a reform of the Shannon, and I think we've been speaking with Shannon reform for quite a long time, but that it's one avenue through which we could give minorities a greater say and a greater voice more quickly. We've had some success at local level in terms of, and we've, and our own party have had considerable success at local level. And indeed, recently, Urumu, our councillor in Longford, contested a Shannon by-election and came third out of 12 candidates and did brilliantly, a superb candidate. So we are beginning to make progress at local level, but it is very difficult and challenging. But parties are up for that in terms of the new Irish. Over time, I do see that being reflected in the National Parliament. I think, first of all, though, we could look at a reform Shannon that would reserve some seats for minority communities.
We have a question for one of the younger women who took part in the Inspire campaign, schools campaign for Inspire. Her name is Ciarán McGuinn, and she says, Taoiseach, 2020 was the first year a woman was put forward in every constituency for the general election. But she says, in my constituency in Clare, women only make up 14% of county councillors. In Waterford, it is as low as 6%. And she says, there's a concern that local politics is being left behind. What are we going to do about that?
Well, I think
all important the more pipeline for women in local.
I worry about local politics generally, and I say that as a party leader, in terms of, is local politics attracting as diverse and as wide range of people as it should? I do not believe it is. And I think that's a negative in terms of our political system into the future. It's a very, very important tier of governance. The workload has increased over the years. The complexity of the workload has increased over the years. I think the Moorhead report is an important aspect of this, as well as reforming the lifestyle issues around participation in local politics. And I do think we have to give it more attention than we have at national level in recent years. So I think that is something the government is committed to and is focused on.
There's a lot of questions about shoes and clothes and everything else. But one which I do want to hone in on, it's an issue that I have a lot of fears about, and that is the shadow pandemic, Taoiseach, of domestic and gender-based violence that we have witnessed reflected in those frightening numbers of breaches of court orders and obviously women exempt from the restrictions. Some, I think, and Garda Síochána have saved the lives of many women during this pandemic. But that pandemic, that shadow pandemic of gender-based violence has been with us. It's estimated to cost over 2 billion euro to the Irish economy every year. What are we going to do to tackle that particular scourge, which has untold social and economic impacts on families and on children and on the next generation?
We were very concerned about it. And in fact, coming up to in the lockdown we had, for example, in October, November, we had got significant data back in terms of the increase in domestic violence in the first lockdown. And so it's an issue, and the reports back in are that when you have severe restrictions, the level of domestic violence can and does increase. And so therefore we have to provide in the first instance far more resources, and we have done that in terms of helping and resourcing those on the front line and helping those who are victims of domestic violence. I think societally and culturally, we have to work on in terms of really outlining this, and in terms of the education of society more generally, in terms of these unacceptable attacks on women in the home and how appalling they are, and how they must be rooted out in terms of society at large. And respect and dignity for people fundamentally is at the root of this, and respect and dignity and the dignity of women is central to this, and the affirmation of that, and also the resourcing of those who support women and families in such situations.
Taoiseach, we have, now even a future of media commission. These issues are being looked at through very many lenses. Is there argument for a permanent, ongoing, savvy-style report that is tracking and monitoring and informing public policy as it relates to women and girls in circumstances where we're seeing huge attacks against women everywhere, including politicians, journalists, the whole lot? The quality of the conversation around women and girls, I think it's the shadow side to International Women's Day that is still with us in such strong measures.
The government is committed to a new national strategy on women and girls and developing that. I think what you've just said, it has to be part of that. I'm a great believer in ongoing live research, longitudinal studies. There was, for example, one today on smoking amongst young people over a 20-year period, and it gives you a sense of the progress that can be made on a given subject. Something similar has to happen in relation to this area of a savvy type research project that would be ongoing and well-resourced to follow this, and in time then would help in terms of the policy responses that would be more effective, and to give women the protection and resources to deal with this very dangerous and deadly issue.
There's lots of questions. I won't get to them all, so I apologise to everyone at home. But I know you will have to leave us momentarily. You have a busy schedule, and we do appreciate you taking this time to be with us today. For you, Taoiseach, perhaps finally, you know, what is your vision for women and politics? Do you have a certain percentage in your mind, you know, what should be achieved by when? You know, what is the radical thing that we need to do? What is your smoking ban thing that you could do that, you know, that hopefully in 10 years' time, International Women's Day will have seemed sort of like a quaint thing because we will have adequate representation?
Well, ideally, I think we need 50%. We need a 50-50 split in Dáil Éireann and in the Shannon.
By when?
where are we now? Well, it's possible by 2030. Beyond that, I think it is possible, and that's what we should be aiming for, and that would be ideal. I think we need more women in politics. Women bring a different perspective and different balance, but we need to reflect society at large. Parliament should. We just need more women in politics, and all the women I've served with on through the years have made telling impacts, you know. I can recall Mary O'Rourke in terms of educational disadvantage, Maura Gegan-Quinn in terms of decriminalisation of homosexuality, Sheila De Valera in the arts when I was in cabinet with Sheila on quite a number of progressive issues, Mary Hanavan and Mary Coughlin I served with, and women very often are much calmer than some men, and they also have different perspectives on different issues.
And of course, we should acknowledge your long-standing chief of staff, Deirdre Glan, who's been at the heart of many of those big decisions. Before I let you go, Taoiseach, what was interesting about the report?
I think sometimes people mistake. I mean, at the heart of the COVID cabinet subcommittee is Deirdre Glan. Yeah. Chiefs of staff of the other, and as well in terms of the Greens. So women have a very key contribution to make to all of the COVID decisions, and they're very difficult decisions. COVID and the impact on women more than men because of the daily life of what the impact, you know, in terms of getting out and about, meeting people, getting to not being able to get to shops and so on like that. It's very hard. It's very, very tough on people.
So, Taoiseach, we've 9 years left before we women take over and have a benign dictatorship. But my last question for you, I hope, is an uplifting one, and it's this. Despite all of the challenges, despite everything that was identified, when those women were interviewed for the Women for Election research, they said despite everything, they would go for it. They would absolutely go for it all over again, even those who didn't get elected. What would you say to those who are aspiring, maybe considering it? Many of the women today might be thinking about it, getting involved as an activist, maybe leading a campaign, not necessarily running for election, but being involved. So what advice would you have for them and for women who aspire to hold public or political office in any area of Irish life?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm conscious that the interview has been about the kind of difficulties and challenges of political life. But political life is a wonderfully diverse, interesting life, you know. It's non-stop. But what I say to school children, when I talk to school children, two things about politics. Well, one thing in particular, every day is different, so it's interesting. You never wake up and do the same thing every day. That's the great thing about politics. If you're committed to public life, to community, to making the world better, go for it. I often say to young students, you know, often a student might love a particular subject and people might be advising the student, don't study that, you won't get a job if you study that, or don't do that degree, you won't get a job if you do that degree. And I hate that type of advice. And I always say to a student, do what you love, you know, just pursue what you love. If you're interested in politics, you find it interesting, go for it. You know, develop a bit of resilience, talk to people who are in politics, who have been in politics, you know, and they'll mentor you and guide you to some degree. But just go for it, because we need you. Society needs you. Part of our social contract is that we don't live as individual islands. We're interdependent. And so we have to work through things together, ultimately. And for that, you do need representative assemblies, be it at local or national level, to guide our society and community forward. So I would say to young women in particular, you know, I would love to see you go forward and get involved in politics in some shape or form. And I saw during the marriage equality referendum and the referendum on the repeal, there was a very significant degree of new participation in politics. And that may herald a different type of engagement in politics into the future, which might be more activist-based or more campaign-based, as opposed to party-based. And then people through that may end up in the Dáil or in political parties. So that means we too also have to rethink the models, the paradigms through which people enter politics. And what both those campaigns taught me, just watching and observing and being a participant, was the degree to which quite a lot of people who opted in would not have been participants in the political system as we knew it, were only too eager to get involved. And the same can be said in relation to climate change and participation and engagement. You know, there's a very strong sort of activist engagement by people and young people in particular in climate change. I think what we have to do then is to say to people, you know, you want to impact climate, well, then you need to take a further step. It's not just about one particular aspect of climate or one particular campaign. You do actually need to see, can we get people into Parliament who would be progressive on climate change policies and the environmental issues and so on like that. And so that's how I would look at it. I just say to people, get involved. We need your involvement. We need your participation.
Absolutely. Well, 50-50 by 2030. We look forward to bringing you back for that landmark, if not before. But Taoiseach, we know you have a really busy schedule. Thank you so much. And congratulations on being the first male politician to enter the Women for Election in conversation with Salon. We know you're busy, so we will let you go. And thank you for being us today. Yes.
Can I just thank you and Women for Election, because they've been prodding us for quite a number of years. But have been very, very supportive and constructive in helping us to do our work better in terms of resourcing and supporting women in politics. Thank you very much.
And Taoiseach, thank you very much, Gurmaya. Good and happy International Women's Day. So just back to studio to you, Alison. I see you took furious notes. There was a lot you were trying to capture and unpack from the Taoiseach today.
Yeah, I mean, I think we heard a lot of, you know, wide-ranging, I suppose, aspirations from the Taoiseach in many senses. He covered a lot of ground in terms of areas that he feels we need to do much better on in this country. I was very pleased that he's put a target out there publicly. I think that's the first time we've seen that, where a Taoiseach has indicated that 50-50 is the target. He's put a date
on it. Your national goal is 30% by 2025. But obviously, you know, it's not too far away. It's one or two electoral cycles away. 50-50 by 2030, is it doable?
I think it's doable. It's doable only if the political parties put their shoulder to the wheel on this. It's not going to happen on some organic movement that suddenly women all around the country find winnable seats within their grasp. The parties are going to have to drive this. We've seen a lot of the smaller parties, the younger parties, find it easier. The established parties with incumbents find it difficult. And the Taoiseach did allude to that in terms of inter-party strife and tension. And I think party...
And also just the challenge of incumbency. It's not just
absolutely.
In Ireland, but in many political systems, you know, the going with what you know. But unfortunately, it does seem to favour kind of the favoured sons, to use a sort of a broad term. But that is a challenge. And just the fact that he was acknowledging that this is a problem both at the pipeline local level, in particular what he was saying, his concerns about what's happening at a local level.
Yeah, I mean, he said he's worried about local politics in this country, and I think for the Taoiseach of the land to publicly acknowledge that, you know, is I suppose repeating what many of us would see on the ground, and many women particularly at local level see in terms of the lack of diversity, the lack of opportunity for our councils and ultimately our national parliament to represent the people that it serves. So, you know, worried about local politics, what are we going to do about it? And I suppose that's you know, that there are issues that we need to see. We need action plans, we need roadmaps, and we need timing on all of this. So ultimately, you know, very supportive noises we're hearing from the highest office in the land, but where's the action plan and the time and the dates that we can start to measure progress with in terms of those aspirations?
I don't know if Katrina is still there at all, or she's joining with us. If not, she is. Katrina, what I find interesting was just the Taoiseach, also his concerns just about generally about the political discourse, the fear that something along the lines of the US Capitol, what happened there, could happen in Ireland, but also that express acknowledgement of the abuse, and particularly the gendered abuse of women in political life at all levels. I think that was a genuine concern that he had.
Yeah, I think, and well responded to by the Taoiseach. I think one of the things we recognise is we actually do have tools there in new legislation, may need more tools, but the Online Harassment Act that was passed in February is certainly going to give the Gardaí the resources to tackle threats to put people in fear. So what I would be really hoping to hear, and we'll be meeting Minister McEntee later in the week, is that the Gardaí now will be resourced, and what Women for Election are looking to do is to insert in that space so the people know about these laws and also know about the tools to protect themselves online. But I think absolutely we've got an insidious behaviour online that's particularly targeted at women at the moment, and we have as a society to really challenge that. So it's great to get the Taoiseach's leadership. And I suppose he knows firsthand what it's like supporting colleagues and around him. But it's great to see his leadership to tackle this with us.
And then obviously, Katrina, as well, just one of the issues is, you know, the issue of maternity and paternity leave for politicians. I think there was an acknowledgement of how serious an issue this is for serving politicians, including the likes of Justice Minister Helen McEntee, but also Clare O'Byrne, but also just that wider issue of, you know, the, acknowledging that this could become international news if we fail to find solutions.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I was very disheartened this morning to hear Clare O'Byrne's resignation, and it's a reality. I think the constitutional impediments are there, and we all, and glad that Taoiseach's recognising those as well, or he's more insight than I do in this area. But one of the things I think that could happen quite immediately is to look at the Local Government Reform Act just as an initial measure. We really want to see permanent systems in place, and I think the Taoiseach really outlined that as well, and equally Minister Burke earlier on in the week, that we don't want to be actually tinkering with a system. We want there to be paid maternity and paternity leave for all politicians if they need to take it. But the amendment to the Local Government Act in the meantime would mean that the likes of Clare O'Byrne and others aren't required to attend meetings, aren't required to be on duty when they're elected locally. So I think that's something that the government could act on. And I know Minister Burke is looking at it, and I would expect the Taoiseach would be advised by him on that as well.
It is strange, and I know I mentioned it earlier, Alison, to the Taoiseach, you know, I feel uncomfortable talking about a woman's pregnancy and her decision to have children in this way.
One woman's private life in terms of her pregnancy should not be a totem for discussion, I think, nationally. This should be something that we're addressing on a structural basis. Why did we wait until we had a pregnant female Minister for Justice to address this thing? And I think ultimately, let's hope what the Taoiseach said in terms of the commitment for this individual case happens. But ultimately, it's a wider discussion to be had. And I think really that's what we've seen from the Taoiseach today is you know, support for so many of these areas. Let's see the meat on the bones. Let's see the legislation coming through. Let's see the targets being achieved. I was particularly interested to hear that the Taoiseach's support for the potential Swedish model of a 50%, you know, nomination process of man-woman, whatever, throughout the process, and his real commitment to that 40% delivery of the 40% quota. But what I'm a little bit concerned about is that, you know, the structure as it stands does not support and will not deliver a 40% quota success. We know
because
it's not
happening.
Because
the parties are struggling.
They're struggling with 30%.
To get to the 30%.
Absolutely.
I'm seeing it maybe conceptually as, well, this is a minimum, instead of, you know, just saying, well, actually, that should be your minimum, target.
It's a floor. It's not
floor.
A target.
Yeah.
So, I think we need to see much more radical action. And I absolutely understand the party difficulty at local level. But we know we need change in this country, and it's not going to happen by itself. It's not going to happen organically. It needs difficult decisions to be made.
And indeed, the research, Katrina, talks about those exogenous or external shocks that are sometimes required. I don't know if I was getting a sense of that we're going to get any big shocks anytime soon. But Alison, what I was interested in was the Taoiseach's openness to the concept of at least of a whole of government, now US-style kind of gender council that would take all decision-making in and apply that all-important lens, and it's because it's aligned with so many areas of policy, including what we finished up with, which is the issue of domestic abuse.
It absolutely is, and you know, we're all looking forward to the day when we wouldn't even need anything like a gender council because it's not required, and because that lens, you know, becomes a natural reaction. We're not at that point at the moment, so we must put in place structures and processes that force that issue. That become a point where you would never dream of putting a group together or issuing a report without being absolutely clear on what the gender aspects of that are and how, in many cases, women are disproportionately affected negatively in some of the issues. We look at a budget every year economically in this country. Is that viewed through a gender lens right from the beginning, not at the end when there's a scandal about, you know, whatever the issue is.
Human rights proof something we should be.
We should be looking at it right from the start across all of our legislation, of course, all of our budgeting and the workings of every government department and our Oireachtas. And clearly our Oireachtas. And again, the Taoiseach has recognised, I mean, you know, he agreed with the quote that politics is a male institution. How are we going to change that? What are the steps we're going to put in place? And I look forward to seeing some really detailed steps and action plan and targets that will be achieved, not aspirations, targets.
Yeah, and I know that obviously that is something for Katrina in terms of taking on a new CEO role during a pandemic. But it's been a busy beginning for you. What are your hopes now, just as you go through now? Obviously, you had last week's launch today. What's on the agenda just coming up, just before we take leave of today's webinar?
Well, Derval, I just have to say, I really feel that I've joined an organisation at a time when something's really bubbling in Ireland. And so I'm delighted to be here to support this strategy that we're for election have to achieve what we hope to see by 2030. So it's now great to be aligned to the vision. So coming up, for Inspire, we're hoping about another 1,200 here. We're running Inspire programs. And a lot of masterclasses that we're going to be running. And we're also going to be reviewing with Senator Bakich and other academics and stakeholders the actual 5C research and looking to present to government a clear action plan that they can take the areas of work that needs to be focused on and prioritised over the next 5 years to actually really make a difference and see that mainstream government. And I suppose just in terms of your comments on the end of council, I think that we lack a very coherent systemic gender expertise across the mechanism of governance. And we're relying on female civil servant or politicians available at 10 tables. And gender expertise is greater than just female representation. So I think something like a gender council, like what President Biden has put in place, where there's very experienced gender experts at the table guiding and advising government and holding account, quite important. Yeah. So I suppose they're my aspirations on a Monday of an International Women's Day in 2021.
Alison, you can really see it when you get to Tati. You're totally inspired by what's happening on the ground. Whatever the official figures are saying, you're totally inspired by the people coming through, whatever they can, trying to get involved.
We are. I mean, we see it. I mean, you know, tonight we're our campaign school, our Inspire campaign school, we've 31 women graduating from that. We had one earlier in the year, and that will continue throughout the year. And as Katrina said, we're hoping to work with about 1,200 women this year. I mean, that's why we're here. This is what we do. It is not about being a pressure group that simply shout the odds against the system. It's training and supporting women to come through. And on this International Women's Day, I would like to salute every single one of them that have come forward, put their hand up, looked at the challenges that are there, but really have, as the research has shown us, I've really said go for it. I'm up for it. I'm ready. I'm as good as any of the others that are already in politics, and I deserve it. And I think that's what we're hearing, and that's what drives us as an organisation to support those women and support them to successful running successful elections. It's not just about running. It's about winning.
It's about winning and staying there when you get there as well. So, look, that is all we have time for today. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. It has been a really special edition of the In Conversation with series, and there's going to be lots of follow events, if you've heard from Katrina and Alison, so please stay tuned for more updates. Finally, no International Women's Day is complete without a call to action, so to all of you watching today, go for it, get active and get involved. Special thanks to Katrina and Alison. Of course, our thanks to Antisha Michal-Martin TD for joining us. And my own thanks to all of the fabulous team here at Fuel HQ for all of your support. And they've gone more than 50-50 to meet us here today. So to all of you watching today, go for it. Get active, get involved. We know that more women in politics means better decisions for us all. Sign up. Speak up, donate if you can, and thank you for being with us today.
Many thanks again to our guests in this episode, Antishuk Michal-Martin, Derval MacDonald and Alison Couser. We hope you enjoyed listening to the conversation. You can listen back to all our podcasts wherever you find your podcasts on social media and on womenforelection.ie. And you can also join our conversations on Instagram, Facebook, and by using the hashtag on Twitter, #morewomen.